Southminster is blessed and fortunate to have incredibly gifted musicians and conductors, Jason and Dan, and pianists, Matt. Thank you. One of the great novels of the early 20th century, in my view, is E.M. Forster's Howards End. At one point in the novel, the character Margaret is contemplating love, and she imagines love personified. And this is from the text of the novel. Margaret had often wondered at the disturbance that takes place in the world's waters when love, who seems so tiny a pebble, slips in. Whom does love concern beyond the beloved and the lover? Yet love's impact deluges 100 shores. No doubt the disturbance is really the spirit of the generations, welcoming the new generation and chafing against the ultimate fate who holds all the seas in the palm of her hand. But love cannot understand this. Love cannot comprehend another's infinity. Love is conscious only of his own. Flying sunbeam, falling rose, pebble that asks for one quiet plunge below the fretting interplay of space and time. Love knows that he will survive at the end of things and be gathered by fate as a jewel from the slime and be handed with admiration round the assembly of the gods. Humanity did produce this, they will say, and saying, they will give us immortality. But meanwhile, what agitations meanwhile? There are so many reasons that I am moved by that passage. I'm reminded of Paul's letter to the Corinthians. In the 13th chapter, Paul writes, "Love never ends. Prophecies, tongues, knowledge, all will end. Love will not. Love, says Paul, endures all things." So Margaret imagines love gathered by fate as a jewel from the slime and being admired by the gods as they sit in assembly to pass judgment on humanity. And the gods cannot help but admire this jewel called love that was produced by humans. They did make this, and for that alone, humankind is granted immortality. E.M. Forster created in this poetic masterpiece a modern theology where he sought to articulate hope before the grave. He plays with a mix of ancient mythology, with characters such as fate and the gods assembled in court. It is modern in that love is not another god or a name for God with a big G. Love is not a supernatural gift to humanity. Love is produced naturally by humanity. Love evolved with humanity. Yes, we did this. Now, we did not consciously produce love. We can't take credit that way. Love emerged from our shared evolved life and became a reality on its own. Humankind produced many things. Nation states, economies, the internet, and war, to name a few. Greed, selfishness, racism, and evil are also sadly listed on humanity's resume. And all of that would be enough to evaluate humanity as an evolutionary dead end. If we could imagine a grand experimenter running things, humankind would be a failed experiment. But humanity's saving grace, its noble achievement, crowning glory, and award-winning sonnet is love. We did get one thing right. We did produce one thing well. E.M. Forster, ever the star-crossed optimist, says love is enough. It's enough to erase the otherwise bad record of the last 2 million years. Love is our ticket to immortality. The universe, however it changes, however life evolves, whatever will come must acknowledge and admire love produced by humankind. Love has made an impact, a pebble in a pond that results in a deluge upon 100 shores. Love is the jewel amidst the slime of our otherwise shallow achievements. But as Margaret says, meanwhile, what agitations, meanwhile. Today, we celebrate the journey from cross to resurrection. In another setting, in another time, another language, we could be celebrating the quest of Gilgamesh for immortality, or Arjuna's encounter with Krishna, or Moses crossing the sea from slavery to freedom, or Buddha's awakening from illusion to clarity, or Muhammad's reception and recital of divine truth. What will endure? What will last? What is worth holding on to? As in the words of Mary Oliver in her poem on traveling to beautiful places, where she says, "But it's late for all of us. And in truth, the only ship there is the ship we are all on, burning the world as we go." And she writes this even as she looks for and finds God everywhere. I agree with Mary Oliver. It is late. And we've been burning this world for some time now, and in every category worth calculating, we've nearly burned it up. From species extinction to global warming, humankind has left its legacy. We've done a number on Earth and all of our other earthlings, the winged ones and the four-legged ones and the crawling ones, who would shudder at our next marvelous invention if they had the consciousness to do so. At the end of humanity's time, will nuclear weapons and oil rigs be handed around the assembly of the gods with admiration? "Humankind did produce these," they will say. I have a difficult time imagining that technology will be our glorification, although it is uniquely us. But so is love, uniquely us. We can't take all the credit, for sure. Love seems to have arisen in our mammalian ancestors before us, but through humans, love blossomed. Love found her voice, her song, her muse, her prophet, her poet, her activist, her saint, her artist. And so in this grand wrestling match between love and knowledge, who will rise? Robert Bly reminds us that we were thrown into this world before we were ready. We should have matured a bit first, so that we might have been able to control our appetites for material things and our obsession with destructive toys. We cannot change what has been. Robert Bly's last line in the first stanza of his poem in the month of May caught my eye. "I love you with what in me is unfinished." Yes, we don't get to grow up before we must live, drive cars, make love, be fruitful, and multiply. We are unfinished. In reality, there's no such thing as finishing school. We are thrust into life unaware of our own purpose. We have to make it as we go. But Bly is hopeful. "I love you with what in me is unfinished." And he goes on to say, "I love you with what in me is still changing, what has not had head or arms or legs, what has not found its body, and why shouldn't the miraculous caught on this earth visit the old man alone in his hut?" So we come to another Easter, an Easter that finds us perilously closer to disaster. And we know that because those who make decisions for our fate try desperately and more brazenly to convince us that it isn't so, that their plan is great, that we should trust them, trust these makers of war and destruction. Put everything in their hands, privatize it all, and they will rule us with beneficence. Yet love rises. Sarah Moores Campbell invites us to push away the stone, even as the dark tomb has protected us and insulated us, comforting us, and given us escape from this world that we are burning. "Awaken, roll away the stone, we need you." The Christian stories of Easter have an earthy and political tone to them. It isn't really about Jesus rising from the dead. The cross was an instrument of state-sanctioned terror. Strategically placed along the entrances to the cities, the crosses with the unfortunates hanging from them served as a clear message: do not let love rise, or this will happen to you. "We are law and order and peace through strength," said Rome. "Put away your silly dreams of independence and justice. Accept what we give you. Stay in line." The story of resurrection is not about Jesus alone. The story of resurrection is for those who would follow this criminal. And that's how Rome saw him, a criminal worthy of nothing more than humiliation and elimination. The story of resurrection is trusting that he told and lived a truth worth living. The story of resurrection is the story of love rising and rolling away stones that entomb our spirit, our souls, and our bodies. The story of resurrection is nothing more than a fable unless the love to which it points rises in us. Unless love inspires us to resist the lies and hear the truth spoken by those who've been beaten down, it's nothing more than sentiment. Love is fierce. Love takes risks. Love hears truth even as that truth convicts. Love knows that the truth it tells is liberating, that binds us together, that shows us what we have in common, that we are human, that brings us together in embrace through tears and then wipes away those tears and summons us to rise together. This is the love that will survive at the end of things and be lifted up by fate as a jewel from the slime and will be passed around the assembly of the gods, and they will say, "This is what human beings are made of. This is what they have given to the universe. This is their legacy." Yes, it is late, but it is not too late for love. Let love rise. Amen.